You are listening to Seattle Sports Saturday, with Lydia Cruz, Curtis Rogers, and Taylor Jacobs on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Hour number two of Seattle Sports Saturday on 710 ESPN Seattle. Coming up in this hour, we got a look at just how a couple of teams managed to pull off some pretty big upsets in the NBA and in the NHL. Are they giving a blueprint to other teams on how to build a championship organization? That's coming up later. Also, at recess time, we got some Father's Day memories, and then Rank It Drafted, drop it at 10:45. Some of the best father-son moments in sports, or father-kid moments in sports, father-daughter, because we got a lot to pick from. And we've also got a pretty notable sports family here at 710. So
that's true.
At least somebody from a notable sports
family.
So that's also coming up at 10:45. But as we've kind of been sprinkling in throughout, the NBA Finals, Stanley Cup Finals, lots and lots of championship moments. We had Kawhi Leonard and a Raptors fan. We didn't get to this last segment, but right here, a Raptors fan just found a potted plant.
Yeah.
I don't know where he found this potted plant.
He calls it a coactus, and it's not quite a cactus, and I'm not quite sure what plant it is. I'm not the biggest green thumb, but, you know, he had a few too many Labatts, a few too many Molsons.
We've got Gardening with Cisco on our station.
Yeah, maybe we should walk over and ask Cisco. He would know. He would have a really, like, I'll tell you what, here's the plant.
Ooh la la. Raptors fans, they got after it. I believe right here.
What's with the plant, man? Where'd you get that?
It's a housewarming gift for Kawhi.
Oh, I see.
He's staying.
Does he know this yet?
I'm waiting. Have you seen him?
I haven't seen him yet. I think he's somewhere in Oakland right now celebrating his butt off.
Well, when you see him, tell him I got a housewarming gift. Tell him I love him.
I will. What kind of plant is that?
Tell him thank you for the shot.
What kind of plant is that?
It's a plant for Kawhi. It's a Kawhi plant.
It's Kawhi.
Love it.
It's a Kawhi plant.
Did you guys hear yesterday that apparently the Mariners were staying at the same hotel that the Raptors were?
Oh, wow. That would have been crazy.
So Gary Hill, who's producer of the Mariners radio broadcast, he was down in the lobby of the hotel this morning, and apparently the Raptors like came down at the exact same time to get on their bus to head home to Toronto, and Gary didn't know this. Uh-oh. And so like you hear this giant crowd roar and people chanting MVP, and he's just like, what's going on?
It was for him.
And he turns around. Well, he thought it was for him.
Yeah.
But he turns around and like Kawhi Leonard's like just a few feet away, and so...
Wow. What a surprise.
Yeah. Like, whoa.
Oh, Gary.
Here are the Raptors. Let's get into it. Yeah. Let's get into this hour's big three.
Number one.
Well, we've talked about it. You follow me on Twitter. You've definitely heard about it. The Toronto Raptors, your 2019 NBA Finals champions. Or should I do that in the Boy Howdy Mike Salk? The Toronto Raptors are the NBA Finals champions. The improbable, unlikely championship for the Six as they completed the six-game victory over the Golden State Warriors, defeating them in Oracle Arena for the third time in the series, 114-110. Kyle Lowry leading all scorers for the North with 26 points, 15 of which scored in the first quarter alone. But we can't talk about this game without talking about Game 6, Klay Thompson. Every Game 6 this guy has played in, he has shown up. He is a big-time player. You know about the injury, unfortunately suffering an ACL injury, being able to gut it out, come back, and shoot two free throws just so he could potentially come back into the game if the injury wasn't significant. Shows you his grit, shows you his toughness, shows you what it means to be a champion. He is everything that you would want in a player and more. If you have kids, you want them to be watching Klay Thompson in the way he plays basketball, the way he holds himself on and off the basketball court. He is a shining light for that league. And it's unfortunate that we're going to have to play months of basketball without Klay and months of basketball without KD, two of the better players in the league. But You look at this Raptors team from Leonard and Lowry to Siakam, Gasol, Green, Ibaka, and Fred VanVleet, all playing massive roles, all scoring big, playing big. Congrats to Toronto. Congrats to the Raptors. And congrats to Drake.
Number two.
Oh, man. Congrats to the city of St. Louis. The Blues win the Stanley Cup. It came down to Game 7, the two greatest words in sports. Blues beat the Bruins 4-1 on Wednesday to clinch their first Stanley Cup final in 51 years of franchise history, finally getting to lift Lord Stanley's Cup, banishing some of the demons from their last finals appearance in 1970 when they were swept 4-0 by Boston, so a little bit poetic coming full circle on that. Bobby Orr's famous flying through the air goal shot that has been immortalized everywhere, but able to banish some of those demons and get it done this week. Ryan O'Reilly scored in his fourth consecutive game in the series, which earned him, understandably so, the Conn Smythe Trophy. Rookie goalie Jordan Binnington, though, was absolutely phenomenal. 25 years old, what didn't even start the year on the team's roster, was in the minors, essentially, with the team and called up midseason to take the place of Jake Allen. Made 32 of 33 saves in this game. This series was absolutely incredible and everything that you could want. Plenty of Game 7s for the Blues, but Game 7 in this, I also, the Blues able to become the first team in Stanley Cup history or in NHL history to win the Stanley while having a losing record at home on home ice through the postseason. 6-7 they went through the postseason at home. So almost better for them that they ended up playing the final game on away ice in Boston, which is just crazy to think about. Typically in hockey, that home ice is such an advantage. Also, what this means for the NHL, Game 7 was the most watched game ever. Drew 8.914 million total viewers on NBC and streaming. Also the most streamed NHL game ever online. So pretty incredible. People obviously drawn into the storylines of this one. Pretty cool.
Number three.
Across the pond in Paris, we've got the Women's World Cup going on. And the story so far of the tournament, it's only group play, but the United States and their opener against Thailand stomping them 13-0. 13-0 in their very first game in the World Cup. They take on Chile tomorrow at 9 a.m. And then later this week, they take on Sweden. That's on Thursday to round out group play. Goals are used as a tiebreak in group play. The United States got just about all of them, but we learned this week that if you score that much on one team, it gets people in their feelings one way or another. Was the United States right for doing that? Were they right for celebrating as much as they did in the World Cup opener when the game was more than out of reach? Or, hey, let's party like you were just goals are going out of style. We'll get into just how the conversation about this game and was the U.S. right or wrong in doing what they did. We'll get into that coming up later on a little bit in the 11 o'clock hour. Just right now, you got Team USA with 13 goals. I'm looking at the entire score sheet from every game. I believe 4 is the next most. France over, or Italy with 5 against Jamaica. So U.S. way out ahead. In terms of goals right now. But you look at the Women's World Cup, and I think everybody kind of expects the United States to be a major player in it. They've won the most of any country. They've won 3. They won the most recent one. So, I mean, they've got the probably the most talented team in the world.
Yeah, but I will say that this year is actually one of the more open years as far as potential winners. You have teams like Australia and the Netherlands and, of course, Germany and these powers, and France being the main amongst them, the main challengers most likely to the United States this year. It's fantastic to see just the quality of play increase. Now, the gap between the top teams and the teams that just qualify for the World Cup, we'll have that discussion here in a little bit about that gap and what they can do about that. But you can't take anything away from the top teams and what they do and how impressive they play. And in Brazil, another team, again, that is always in the running, that will be competing again this year and have a competitive team to challenge the United States. So buckle up. It's going to be an exciting one. And it's not always just the United States winning. Other countries win. I know we think we're the most dominant. We are the most dominant, but other countries win the Women's World Cup all the time.
And there was a great article in the Wall Street Journal, I think just yesterday, about that, about European super teams or superpowers and how they are creating some more parity. And it's crazy that the fact that these women are doing all of this and also at the same time still having to sue the governing body for equal pay and equal treatment. And yeah, we'll get into more of that later. But a lot of emotions surrounding this entire thing and what it means for women's sports.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's coming up at 11 o'clock. We will get into that conversation a little bit further. Some other things going on right now. The U.S. Open round three will tee off today. Gary Woodland, never heard
household
of him
name.
Yeah, he is the leader at -9, which the U.S. Open going on means it's the return of the golf show. Golf show never constantly existing, but it returns. Just as, you know, as anything that you love will always come back to you. The golf show with Jim Moore and Sean Crew, that goes on today at 1 o'clock, goes from 1 to 2 right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. And then in the NFL, it's a quiet week across the National Football League, but we did get the news that the next edition of Hard Knocks will feature the Oakland Raiders, a team with the craziest collection of personalities I can ever remember. You've got Antonio Brown, John Gruden, Richie Incognito, and then station favorite Luke Wilson.
Yeah, absolutely. Techno Thursday creator.
Yeah, no Marshawn Lynch, though, which I think he may have gotten out at just the right time. But that Raiders Hard Knocks season, who are you looking forward to seeing the most of all the personalities on that team?
I mean, honestly, I'm just concerned about Richie Incognito.
Yeah.
It almost feels a little irresponsible.
To put him in front of a camera?
But also, maybe it's a good thing that you will have video evidence of whatever's going on there, since it's also, I just think it was an irresponsible move to sign.
Sticking with my theme of cuckoo crazy, I'm going to go Antonio Brown.
Okay.
Just he was cuckoo crazy in this offseason, and I'm assuming that's going to continue over into the regular season. And, you know, he had the Dumb and Dumber snot mustache for a little bit. And, Antonio Brown is going to be wild.
You know who I'm looking forward to seeing? Is a guy who doesn't talk a lot but is pretty bonkers himself, Vontaze Burfict.
Whoa, yeah.
That guy is just... anything that you've seen from him on the football field, like, you got to imagine that guy goes to a dark place to play the way that he does. So I want to see what he's all about. I mean, he is, yeah.
No shortage of personalities, that's for sure. And remember, this is a team, too, that didn't even trust their own scouts enough to not leak information or whatever was going on, that they kicked them out of the draft war room not that long ago. So even in the front office, you've got a plenty cast of characters.
That's right. And their GM is Mike Mayock, who is his first season in charge of an NFL franchise. So they've got a lot of just possibility for some great television.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you don't want to stop and stare at a car crash when you're driving by, but sometimes you just can't help but look. That's, I think, what this could end up being.
The tree's on fire. We got the cat out of the tree, right? No one is in actual danger, but now we're going to watch the tree just burn because we're all standing around now. And that's basically what's going to happen on HBO on Hard Knocks.
Couldn't have described it any better. Coming up next, the Blues pulling off an upset. The Raptors pulling off an upset. How did these two teams change how teams could build contenders? That's coming up next right here on Seattle Sports Saturday on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Seattle Sports Saturdays with Lydia Cruz, Curtis Rogers, and Taylor Jacobs
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Coming up at 10:45, when we rank it, draft it, drop it, what are the greatest father-kid stories in sports? Lots to pick from. It is Father's Day weekend, so that's very fitting that we've chosen to do that. That's coming up at 10:45.
Oh, whoa. Yeah. I didn't realize we did that.
Yeah, you better get a gift for your dad.
I better.
That all afternoon.
Although I will say I solicited some help from Twitter yesterday to try and find said gift, a.k.a. a Raptors championship hat for my dad.
Oh, nice. Okay, yeah.
No luck. You can't buy local anymore.
Wow.
So. Support local.
I'm trying to support local, and I can't. I'm trying.
That is, coming up at 10:45, we rank it, draft it, drop it. And then at 11 o'clock, we get a little deeper into the U.S. Women's National Team discussion. A lot of hate being thrown their way for scoring so many goals and celebrating so many goals when the game was in hand Was the reaction to their celebration worse than their actual what they did out on the field? That's coming up at 11 o'clock. Right now in the NBA and the NHL, you had two teams, the Raptors and Blues, who at the beginning of the season, I mean, there was people kind of viewed the Raptors as a dark horse to win the NBA title. They acquired Kawhi Leonard. But Lydia, you being the Blues fan, I can't imagine there were too many people out there saying that the Blues were going to, you know, hoist the Stanley Cup come season's end.
I can't tell you exactly what the Vegas odds were, but it was probably, here's the thing, they've always put a competitive team on the ice in the past couple of years, and the way that their organization run, no amount of huge dysfunction or anything, but still, they have 51 years of history of not winning the Stanley Cup, not being perennial winners. So I think that is always going to haunt some of your team and your team's story. They were put together to succeed. So their terrible first half of the season, where they ended up being in last place on January 3rd, was kind of a surprise. The guys talk about how they, leading into the season, were very confident, how they thought they had something special, and that actually when they dipped so much in that October, November, December range, that was part of what kept them going, was talking to each other about, we know we have something good here, and that's the positive culture that they have. But it was really when Jordan Binnington was called up that they started to succeed. The 25-year-old former, I think, third-round pick of the team back in 2011, then came in, had a shutout on his first in his first NHL win back on January 7th, and things really just cascading from there. A lot of it, I think, is because of that backs against the wall mentality that then they had to have. They had momentum on their side. There was a stretch where I think they didn't have back-to-back home games for like a month. So part of the theory that why they were so poor on home ice and how they were so great on away ice was because of that time stretch when they got into this, I don't know, pattern of being out on the road and really bonding together. There's a thing about it when you're out on the road, you're not in your home environment. You're not having to be subject to the daily things that you do when you're at home. Like, oh, you got to see friends, you got to make these phone calls, you got to take out the trash, you got to do all this stuff. But when you're out on the road, you're all in. You're all in on the game and you bond. And that's when they really developed this and took it into the postseason.
And you mentioned Binnington there, Lydia. And I think that's a great example and what he did and standing on his head, as we learned the phrase.
He is the flatliner of all flatliners.
Oh.
Dude has, there's a great video online called Many Words of Jordan Binnington.
Yep.
And it shows you how he's the master of the one word answer.
So you talk about Binnington. And then last year you have the Vegas Golden Knights and Marc-Andre Fleury. And what he was able to do as well with that expansion team. My question for you, Lydia, would be, should the Seattle hockey franchise value the goalie more than any other position? Is that the first thing that they should get secured? Should they go after a big name? Is the goalie the key to success in today's NHL?
In many ways, yes.
Yeah.
It is like having a quarterback.
Mm.
I think if you can have a great goalie playing poorly, which actually was more of Boston's story the first half of the season, was Tuukka Rask was not playing like his typical Tuukka self. And then in the second half was absolutely incredible. Through the postseason was incredible. Even in the series against the Blues. I mean, he is amazing. You kind of need that as your leader and as your anchor. Because if your goalie's not playing well, then your offense is up against a wall and has to just be that team that scores all the time. The Mariners have experienced this. If your pitching isn't working and the team is able to put up 8 runs and you've got to score 9, that's just a tough position to be in every single night. The Vegas Golden Knights benefited from an interesting situation where they were able to get one of the more well-known, established goalies at the time. I can't say that the Seattle expansion franchise will luck into that quite in the same way.
I think front offices across the NHL now recognize, like, oh, we may have let go of too much talent. I think they're going to be a lot more cognizant of who they're letting go.
Yep. But the rules are still the same, right?
The rules
so there
are
still is
same.
The potential. I know you're right, Curtis, and that the GMs probably are more cognizant of what happened in that expansion draft heading into the one here in a year or so with Seattle.
You can still only protect the same amount of players. I believe it's
correct.
8 or 10, depending on how many defensemen that you want to lock down and protect. And then you can also protect a goalie. But there's some stipulations when it comes to contracts and no trade clauses that factor into it.
St. Louis is a great example. So they have Biddington right now, and he's on a small deal. But didn't they sign
Jake Allen.
Well, Jake Allen is who they've paid a lot of money to. They also had another goalie that was playing for them earlier this year. Johnson is his last name. I can't think of his first name right now. But, yeah, it's... they've actually had sort of uncertainty at that position the last couple of years, and I think that's why they've struggled so much. They've relied on their second-string goalie a lot of the time, either when Jake Allen's hurt. They've had Carter Hutton in there. And so if you don't have that consistency, it makes it really difficult for everything else to work. Yes, I think that should definitely be a focus of the new team. I also think the reason the Blues won in a lot of ways is just being that extra level of physical. The game is moving towards a more skilled, precision, speed, technical era. I mean, people are just playing hockey faster than they ever have before, and there's less bruisers. The classic bruiser mentality of when you used to watch hockey of old, where people are just smashing each other, usually a lot bigger guys. And that physicality can't be underestimated, though. And that was one of the reasons the Blues, even though outmatched in pretty much every category on paper, other than maybe their blue liners, their defensemen were slightly had the edge on Boston. Really, it was how much they came out and played physical, were willing to hit the other team. And Craig Berube mentioning that as well. I do love this quote on physicality being their identity.
Well, I think it's been important all year. I think that's the type of team we are. We're a heavy team. We're a hard forechecking team. That's our go-to. We want to get on a forecheck. We want to be physical. We want to be hard to play against. And I think that I don't think that's just the reason why we won, but it's a big part of the way we play.
It just really reminded me of the Seahawks. That's all. It reminded me of, I want to be this team that's going to run the ball down your throat. We're going to be physical. We're going to play somewhat old school style football and take away your will, take away your spirit, and just wear you down by the end of the game. So it reminded me a lot of Pete Carroll's philosophy.
I think the one thing that I loved the most about the Blues and the Raptors is that they both were faced with situations where they had a reason to blow it up. Where the Blues at one point, they had the worst record in the NHL. What was it, in January?
January 3rd, yeah.
And you had the Raptors, on the other hand, continually getting to the Eastern Conference semis and in the Eastern Conference finals with DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry, and they just couldn't do it. And they fired their head coach, Dwayne Casey, at the end of last season. And both teams in a position to say, you know what, let's hit the reset button and get fresh blood in here and just try and start it all over again. And neither team wilted when faced with those kinds of situations. The Raptors said, you know what, we're going to try and improve on what we've been doing. And they went out, traded DeMar DeRozan, who is he's an icon in Toronto. He is one of the most beloved Raptors of all time. Maybe the most beloved Raptor, because he had said in past, this is where I want to be.
Yeah.
I want to be here.
Maybe other than Vince Carter, and just simply because of the impact he had on Toronto and the city, DeMar is and still is one of the most important athletes in Toronto history.
And then they go out and add Kawhi Leonard, who we all know is a top three player in the NBA because he asserted that about him this season. But coming into the year, he was coming off the injury that he suffered against the Warriors. And then, he goes out and has the season that he does, and the Raptors win a championship.
He's an absolute monster. The only player ever to win MVP in both
conferences. No, the third player to win MVP on two separate teams, joining the likes of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and LeBron James.
Yeah, but the only one to win it in both conferences.
Oh, sorry. Yes.
MVP in both.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes,
okay.
In the Eastern and Western. Yes,
pretty
sorry.
Cool. Yeah. Pretty crazy.
And
he's just different, man.
Yeah.
And I mean,
I love it.
Boardman gets paid.
Boardman gets rings.
He's a fun guy. And Kevin Calabro, the all-time legend, the voice of the Sonics, everyone's favorite here in Seattle, had some thoughts about what Toronto did and what they implemented in this matchup specifically that stood out to him.
Toronto is just, they implement, I think, a lot of that stuff you saw in the 90s, a lot of trapping defense. pick it up sometimes three-quarter court like the old UB Brown Knicks used to do a little bit. I mean, they to me, yes, they implemented a whole lot of basketball of the past into what is now obviously basketball of the future, which is freedom of movement and the shooting of the three, which was obviously so important for both teams in this series.
So
goes along with our theme, honestly.
Yeah, honestly, the physicality, and that was one of the first things I wrote down. Depth definitely played a role for the Toronto Raptors, and I think going forward, you may see teams a little bit more hesitant to go all in on just three players and might splash out for just the two and try and build with some of the depth. So that's a thing to keep an eye on
because
there.
Because what happens when your main players go down?
Correct.
And you have to deal with those injuries.
Right. And that was, injuries are part of the game. And no matter what you want to say, if you want to criticize the Raptors for beating an injured Warriors team, criticize the Warriors for beating an injured Cavs team in 2015 when they beat them without Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving. Criticize some of those Bulls teams for beating some of the injured guys from the old generation, from the Bird Magic generation that were worn down. Blame those things as well. I want you to hold them as accountable. And if you do, every championship will have a star next to it.
Oh, yeah.
If you hold it to that standard. You just can't hold it to that high of a standard. But one thing I think the NBA may look at from the Toronto Raptors and apply throughout the league, I think, is length and how you use that length.
Spicy P.
Spicy P is a great example. Pascal Siakam, 6'9", power forward. He can shoot threes, so he's that spread style. You look at Marc Gasol, crafty veteran, 7'1", great defensive player, former defensive player of the year, can pass extremely well as well. So you can run your offense through some of that length. Kawhi Leonard, we know about him. Danny Green, 6'6 for a shooting guard, is a big shooting guard. You just keep going down the list here. Serge Ibaka, 6'10. You know, he's been in the league for 9 years. He's a crafty veteran, but he's not even 30 yet, and he's been averaging double-digit points. He's been a monster on the defensive end. You're just seeing these long players have a bigger impact on the game, especially now with the spread and the step-back three and the slashing style. That length can help you defend the perimeter as well as defend the interior as well when they start slashing to the hole.
I do love that from all of these examples that we've talked about, from the Blues to the Raptors to even the Seahawks, there is a value in being unique or finding one element when all the rest of the league is going one way or doing one thing, in being unique. And obviously, it can still be very successful, but I think that's also hopeful for Seahawks fans.
Coming up next here on Seattle Sports Saturday, it's time for us to get out, stretch out, get some fresh air. It's recess time. We're sharing some of our favorite Father's Day stories. That's next. Curtis Rogers, Lydia Cruz, Taylor Jacobs on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Seattle Sports Saturdays with Lydia Cruz, Curtis Rogers, and Taylor Jacobs
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Well, it is Father's Day weekend.
Happy Father's Day. Yeah, all the dads out there.
Shout out to dads. I know that us three here, we would not be as invested into sports as we are if it weren't for our dads. And
yep.
That got us thinking, like, what is some of the best sports memories we've had with our dads? And then coming up in Rank It, Draft It, Drop It, we rank the greatest father-kid stories in sports. A lot to pick from, which is really cool, really neat to see, because and especially here in Seattle, I think there's going to be one on our list that a lot of people remember very vividly.
Yeah.
That
one of the coolest things maybe in sports history.
And probably will never, ever be replicated.
No.
Probably
it's really
not.
Special.
But that's coming up at 10:45. But, I mean, just it is Father's Day weekend. And, you know, growing up, playing baseball in the front yard, you know, taking swings at the neighbor's house, that was a pretty big staple in the Rogers household. I know I wouldn't be playing. I know I wouldn't have played baseball throughout my entire life if it weren't for my dad. I know I wouldn't be as big of a sports fan or as big as a baseball fan without that. One of my favorite Father's Day memories, though, and this is something that's happened, I would say, probably like 5 or 6 times. Now, we let my dad pick like where he wants to go eat dinner that night.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
About 5 or 6 times, he has picked a restaurant that is like recently closed, and we only find out until we get there.
Oh.
And it's like,
bless you, Dad.
If you run a restaurant in town, you better hope that the Rogers family does not come your way specifically on Father's Day.
Yeah, that doesn't spell good things for you.
No.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a dad move right there.
That is a very dad move.
Text in, first of all, 710-710. Yeah. If some of your favorite sports memories with your dad or maybe your son or your grandpa or, you know, the families are all different. Maybe you have a different relationship with someone. It's a father figure. It's a coach. It's a big brother. It's someone maybe not a father, but a father figure. So everyone has a different family and different family
dynamics.
Yeah. So we'd love to hear from you. 710-710. Your favorite memories with your dad or the father figure in your life involving sports.
Tay, what is one of your favorite memories involving sports and your dad?
So with me, my dad's from Kansas City, so he's a massive Chiefs and Royals and Jayhawks fan and a Seattle fan as well. But that's where his roots are, and some of my initial sports roots are in that as well. And growing up here, the Seahawks were in the AFC West, so we got to see a lot of Chiefs and Seahawk games together, and luckily somehow we lived next to one of the Chiefs players who lived in Seattle, and James Hasty, and I became really good friends with his son. So, you know, through that, I also became close to my dad and the way I sort of watched the Chiefs and watched the Seahawks growing up and how I became a fan. And this year I got to take my dad to a game, and
so cool.
Yeah, it's really special because, you know, to be able to return the favor, I think is really special. And yeah, I'm going to try not to get emotional here. Yeah, I just really, you know, I'm so thankful for my dad and all he's done, and he's my hero. And yeah, it's just really awesome that I got to do that. And I'm excited to do that more. So I can't cry.
We all know the results of that game, but did he have a good time regardless?
Yeah, I mean, look, he got to see Patrick Mahomes, who's one of the most exciting players in the league.
That was a great game,
too. He got to see the Seahawks qualify for the playoffs officially. We got to be together and go out to dinner. And we were sitting in the 300 level, and they weren't the best seats in the world.
Well,
but it was just, none of that mattered. And we were together, and it was just the coolest moment. And you know, you just have to stop sometimes and appreciate those moments. So I'm trying to do that right now.
Absolutely.
And maintain composure on air, but that would be mine for sure.
I can relate to that, too. One of the reasons I love all sports is because of my dad. And baseball, a huge part of it. He would always play with me. Same thing, same stories, playing in the back alleys, playing catch. Never pushed me. Never was that helicopter parent that you see so often now. But always there if I wanted to play. I always wanted to play. And he was actually a big-time baseball player in college. I say big time, at least big time to me.
Yes.
And
He's big time.
Yeah. Ended up being bullpen catcher for his hometown team, the Los Angeles Dodgers, at one point. So he had that experience of being in the bullpen with some pretty big-name pitchers, but is so humble about it. And I had to find these stories out later in life. Like, he also played against in high school Raleigh Fingers, and I didn't find that out until recently. It was like, just slow play. Way to slow play that one, Dad.
Yeah.
Unless he had a mustache at age 17. Who knows? I don't know.
You had to build the base at some point, right? So he was building the fundamentals at least.
Yeah. But he is just one of the reasons, I love baseball so much. And I think it's not any one specific memory that I can think of. It is just sitting with him and watching and hearing his comments on the game, and also just that general attitude. I think baseball reflects life so perfectly in that a lot of it can be failure. A lot of it is built on failure. You know, if you go up to the plate and you succeed, you always hear that saying, one out of three times you're a wild success. But I think that he always instilled that in me too. It's about not failing. It's about, you're going to fail. It's about getting up and going to the ballpark the next day. It's about doing the next thing.
Yeah.
And he always had a saying for me, which I think is stolen from a movie, but ganas, which is, because my dad is Mexican and we speak Spanish sometimes, but it's the desire and the will to win, and always having that continual spirit in whatever you do. Desire and passion for what you're doing. So the big reason, thank you, Dad. Thank you to all the dads on this show, because also you guys are incredible people, and you wouldn't be that way without your dad. So I'm very thankful to them, because it ends up making my life richer as well.
A lot of great texts coming in on the Coors Light text line. A lot of people texting in their favorite sports memories with their dad. From the 253, saying, I got to see Felix's perfect game with my dad, if by accident. Had an opportunity to go that day, midweek, turned it down 2 hours later, called my dad, said, hey, you want to go? He said, yeah, I got the tickets back. Rest is history. Still have those tickets, made a plaque for him.
So cool.
And then
I have goosebumps.
From the 206, my dad taught me to be a huge Seahawks fan as a kid, and I always wanted to go to a game but could never afford tickets. As an adult, it was so special to be able to take him to his first Seahawks game, just the two of us. It was a blast. That's from Samantha in the 206.
Oh, thank you, Samantha. I had a similar experience, too, taking my dad for the first time. It's he didn't, the whole time he was living here in Seattle, never went to a Seahawks game. And I also able to take him, albeit in the 300 seats.
Yeah.
But they don't care.
No.
No.
I remember
be there together.
The first time my dad and I went to a Seahawks game, and we haven't gotten to many because just like, as Samantha in 206 says,
yes,
ticket prices for those games are wildly expensive. The first game we went to was in Husky Stadium.
Nice.
And it was against the Chargers, and the wind was just howling, and it was like 30 degrees and rain and sideways, and we're all sitting bundled up, and like no one's near us, and there was like the stadium was probably like half full that day, but I mean we still reminisce about it every now and then because it was just they ended up winning, and it was a pretty dismal year for the Seahawks. Those kinds of moments, those are a lot of fun. From the 206, as a father of two girls, I love being able to take them golfing on Father's Day.
Oh,
my scorecard
cool.
suffers, but it's always the most fun.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's got to be a fun round.
Oh, yeah. Wow, that's neat.
Yeah, and just flashing back to some other stories as we just go around the circle here and tell stories. But, we're lucky here in Seattle. We've had a lot of awesome sporting events and things we've got to experience. We've had an all-star game. The NFC Championships, NBA Finals in the mid-90s.
You have Final Four here.
Final Four. You had the Refuse to Lose era. You just have a lot of... Yes, there's been some downtimes, but there's also been some really amazing events that we've had here. And All-Star Game with my dad in 2001. You know, I'm 13 years old.
Cool.
Getting to see these Mariners stars and Ichiro and this team that was on a unprecedented win pace and... Just that experience, and then the game and
Cal Ripken Jr.
and the switching of positions, Tommy Lasorda getting hit with the bat, and
that's right.
Barry Bonds bringing out the catcher's gear for him, and just the fun of that game, and you could just feel those moments, and you see a lot of these texts coming in. You have something about baseball and the relationship with a father and his child. There's something there, and that connection of playing catch in the front yard or batting practice or going to a game. Games are a little bit more accessible. There's more games in a season. They're not as expensive.
Mm-hmm.
They've been around for a long time, so you've had a little bit more time to go and see some of these games, like Sounders games as well.
Yeah.
I'm a Sounders season ticket holder, and I love soccer, and I got to take my dad to see the Sounders play Man United and the Sounders play Barcelona and the Sounders play Chelsea. Like these games, and I know that they're friendlies and they don't really mean anything, but those are some of my favorite teams ever, and both sides, Man United and Sounders or Barcelona. I love watching those teams and to see them come together, and then with the two worlds, with my dad and I being there together as well. It's just I wouldn't trade a single second of any of it.
That's amazing, and there's different almost types of games that you can take your dad to and have a totally different experience, because there's games where you don't talk at all because you're all in on what's happening. And then baseball, as you mentioned, sort of the slower of the sports, allows for conversation in between things. So you can have two very different amazing experiences going to different sporting events with your dad. And it's just very grateful for them today and all days.
And you got to watch a Stanley Cup for the first time.
That was so cool.
With your family.
My parents.
Generational Blues
so
fans.
So excited. Shout out to my grandparents also, who were Blues season ticket holders. I believe it could have been the first year that they were there, 1967, for one season. And unfortunately, no longer with us. But shout out to them because they are very happy, I'm sure, in heaven somewhere about the Blues winning.
Yeah.
So cool.
Keep texting in. We got to keep talking about this.
Yeah, so in this spirit,
yes,
we now go to Rank a Draft to drop it next. What are some of the best father-kid stories in sports history? There's one that is very local on our list. We will talk about that next. Curtis Rogers, Lydia Cruz, Taylor Jacobs, Seattle Sports Saturday right here on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Seattle Sports Saturdays with Lydia Cruz, Curtis Rogers, and Taylor Jacobs.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Seattle Sports Saturday. just missed it. We talked about some of our greatest Father's Day memories and sports moments with our dads. Now we're looking at great sports moments with dads and their kids in the professional ranks. None of us got to play professional sports unless you consider, like, watching Netflix for hours on end to be a pro sport. If that's the case, then...
I don't know. I finished fourth in the PAX Prime Diddy Kong Racing Tournament
Racing.
I'm like a top four Diddy Kong racer in the world.
I feel very strong about my Diddy Kong game as well, so maybe we'll have to face off at some point.
And
I mean,
feel stronger about that than Mario Kart.
Me too.
Okay, wow. All right. Learning new things every day.
And I got second place in a team trivia night.
Yeah.
By myself.
Yeah, I was going to say, you didn't have any teammates. I think you were trying to recall what teammates you had. You had none.
Yeah.
I put the whole team on my back because it was just me.
If you ever see one guy at your trivia night, it's Curtis, and get out of there. Just take whatever the money was, pack it up, finish your drinks, get home responsibly, because Curtis is taking that money.
Well, I mean, I'll gladly. Got a $25 gift certificate that night. But greatest father-kid stories in sports. What's great is that there are a ton to pick from.
Yes.
And we've got sort of an honorable mentions list here. You've got Barry Bonds and Bobby Bonds. Bobby Bonds was the base coach for Barry Bonds, and then Barry Bonds' son at the time was also the bat boy, so he had like three generations of Bonds in the dugout for the Giants at the time. You got Dale Earnhardt Sr. and Jr., just a crazy, crazy couple-year run stretch when Dale Sr. was still alive. Dale Jr. winning a Cup Series event in 2000, beating his father. I believe he was a rookie that season. And then in 2001, Dale Sr. passing away at the Daytona 500. And then months later, in July of that year, Dale Jr. winning on the very same track that Dale Sr. passed away at. I'm not a NASCAR fan. I don't watch it a whole lot, but I remember watching that. And, I was only 10 years old at the time, but even then, you could feel the magnitude of that moment. Where it was like, whoa.
I think that's why it has to be mentioned. I think you have to talk about this one. I would say generally in the Northwest, we're not the biggest NASCAR hotbed. There are fans. I'm not going to say there aren't fans up here, but usually we're not a big NASCAR area. And you're right, Curtis. This moment stands out to me as well. I remember this feeling and the, I guess, just the general aura around racing at the time when they lose this icon of the sport and his son is able to step up in that hallowed place and able to put positive memories onto that track.
Yeah. We've also got the Manning family, Archie, Eli, Peyton. A lot of four Super Bowl rings, hundreds of thousands of passing yards.
Can I mention the other Manning?
Cooper.
Yeah. Consistently left out. Yeah. For Coop. Shout out to Coop.
Love Coop.
Cooper Manning also. Lydia, Brett Hull, and Bobby Hull. St. Louis Blues. And then while Bobby played for the Blackhawks.
The coolest thing was at the Winter Classic a few years ago, which was in St. Louis, how they had both of them out there.
Because it was Blues and Blackhawks.
It was Blues and Blackhawks. Mm-hmm. One of the best rivalries that exists in hockey, and these two out there together on the ice and then posing for a photo in their respective jerseys was pretty cool.
916 also pointed out Gordy, Mark, and Marty Howe.
Oh,
the Howe family, another influential hockey family.
Legends.
Yep, another first family of hockey.
There are a lot in hockey, I will say. It seems like. What do you think of the sport is that has the most generation to generation? It does seem in the NFL we do end up
baseball
having a lot
too.
Baseball also.
A lot of baseball ones with, you've got, especially here in Seattle, you have the Boones. With Aaron and Brett, and then Bob, and then Grandpa Ray also. Mm-hmm. So three generations. You have the Bells, Buddy Bell, and David Bell, and then I believe whoever the Bell Grandpa was. So two third-generation players on the same team, 2001.
And on Seattle Mariners right now, you have Dee Gordon, whose father, Nick Gordon, played for several years.
Tom,
I meant his brother right now, Nick Gordon, in the minors his half-brother in the minors for Minnesota Twins, I believe.
Yeah.
Some smaller sports having some as well. It's not just the major sports. Pete and Dick Weber.
Oh, hey. Who do you think you are?
I am.
Yeah. Let's get into our rankings of the father-kid sports stories that we've seen. Number three, taking you back to the 1980s, And we're taking you to Baltimore with the Orioles and Cal Ripken Sr. managing that ball club. And two of the 25 members of that roster were people that he had a big hand in raising.
Yes.
His two of his sons, Cal Jr. and Billy Ripken, members of that Orioles team. So you had three Ripkins in the same dugout that season. I mean, just that's probably got to be one of the coolest feelings. I know when I was in my final couple of years in high school, my dad got to coach a little bit, and you know that was the coolest thing because he had always worked and he had retired shortly before then, and so he had free time, and it was like, oh, okay, cool, I get to play with my dad now. Like that's really cool, and I can't imagine what it's like on the professional level with Cal Jr. being as great as he is playing with his dad, and I mean just really cool to see that happen.
Yeah,
I mean I can't imagine that.
A lot of these moments you have to ask yourself, can or will they ever be replicated?
Right.
And I don't think that's one that you'll ever see.
Yeah.
With two kids?
With two kids.
Because we saw it in the NBA with Same Austin team. Rivers and Doc Rivers,
yep.
But we've never seen it again with two kids being managed by their dad. Number two, we got the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, Muhammad Ali and Leila Ali, a combined 85-0. Record-wise,
wow.
Muhammad Ali, of course, 56-5-0. Leila Ali, undefeated, perfect, flawless record at 24-0-0. 58 combined knockouts between the two of them. I mean, if you're talking about the greatest, it is the greatest male boxer and the greatest female boxer of all time, and the conversation starts with both of them.
Just two people who changed their their sport.
You either are starting with them in the conversation or you're not having a correct conversation about the best all time in boxing because they have to be in the conversation. Not only their impact in the ring, but off the field, out of the ring, what they were able to do. Leila, for women's boxing and women's sports in general, her dominance. You look around some of the other women's sports, and Serena talks about her relationship with Leila Ali all the time and what sort of motivation she is able to get from her as well. And then on the other side, Muhammad Ali, you know, standing up for his rights, and even when it was the most tough and being stripped of titles and coming back and battling back and still being able to do what he was able to do.
Making sports bigger than sports.
Right. And just... to have the nickname the greatest, they don't give those out. They don't give them out. Wayne Gretzky, Ali, you know, Pele. Those are some of the people who have those names. So if you're going to have a conversation about a father and a child, you have to have these two involved.
And so our number one, Lydia.
Yeah.
I believe you've got the audio for this one.
Yep.
I feel like we could just play it and everybody probably knows what we're
in this area definitely knows.
I mean, the story continues to get better and better and better and better over the last 2 weeks ever since senior signed. Here's the pitch on the way, swinging a fly ball deep in the left field. Way back, going back. Goodbye, baseball. They do it. The Griffies with back-to-back home runs. And the story continues to get better and better and better. Ken Griffey Jr.
I mean, we will never see that.
Ever.
No
and,
way.
And from two people, one of the greatest in the sport ever in Ken Griffey Jr. And then Ken Griffey Sr., still a decent player in his own right. When could and if will this ever happen again?
Only other time it could possibly happen in the next few years is LeBron James and Bronny
That's
James.
What I was going to say. Mm-hmm. Or Zaire Wade. Oh, I guess Dwayne Wade's gone. It can't happen.
Yeah.
Can't even happen.
I think LeBron and Bronny, that's like the only possibility of a father playing with his son. And then also going back to back like that, it'll never happen.
Yeah.
I get chills every time.
Coming up next, the United States women's national team. They are kicking butt and taking names, but unfortunately, that's getting some people riled up about it. We talk about that next. Curtis Rogers, Lydia Cruz, Taylor Jacobs on 710 ESPN Seattle.